Welcome to Cryptic Soup. Tonight's case is Sarah Stern. Sarah was murdered at the hands of one of her friends for money. After the murder, her body was disposed of with no regard to human life, and the killer went on to lie about committing this act, much like a previous case we covered, the Cassie Jo Stoddart case. Her killer pretended this was all just fake and for the sake of a movie script. I'm Kylie.
And I'm Thina.
And tonight, we have a scary case about friendship to share with you.
So it's like Thursday now, right? Like people are listening and it's probably Thursday.
Probably.
Okay.
Unless you're weird and stay up really late on Wednesday.
Okay. On Monday, I posted about it, but like a case we covered back in 2022, the Oscar Pistorius case.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting released from prison the day before my birthday.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, I don't either. But then I was looking into it more and I didn't realize he's getting released on parole, right? Even if he wasn't released on parole for good behavior or whatever it is, he would be released in 2 years anyways. His sentence is up in 2 years. He only had a 13-year sentence, but he's getting out after 11 years.
I hated that when I learned about it, and I hate it still.
I think I like decided to block that part of my memory because I was like, yeah, maybe he won't. Maybe something will happen.
Right.
But no, he's coming into the world.
No.
Yeah, I'm really unhappy about that.
That's in the archives, guys.
Yeah, that's an episode in the archives, is the story of Oscar Pistorius and Reva Steenkamp. It's one of those stories about a dude who's a piece of shit and murders his girlfriend. Not similar to. That's the other way around. I was going to say Jodi Arias and Travis Alexander, but in that one, she murders him. But the reason I bring that up is because today I was looking up our 5 most played episodes and I have the order wrong, but I'm going to tell them to you. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Number 1 is Gainesville Ripper.
Mm.
Number 2 is, I think it's number 2 is the Hart Family Murders. Number 3 is Cassie Jo Stoddart. Number 4 is the murder of Travis Alexander by Jodi Arias. And then number 5 was actually a tie between 2 episodes with the exact same amount of listens, Skinwalker Ranch and Allison Bosa.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you want to hear a funny story?
Yes.
You know how I say that and I'm being sarcastic?
Oh.
Everyone, as you look at me, every single one in my leadership group at work has COVID right now.
What?
That's why it took me so long to get back to you about when we were recording tonight, because I had to take a test.
That really sucks.
Yeah. I'm like the Lone Ranger over here. It's coming back, guys. You gotta be careful. There's definitely an uptick. We had an email go out where it was basically like, if there's an uptick to like this, whatever level, that we'll have to wear masks in the clinic again.
Well, you ready to learn about Sarah Stern?
No, okay. I have beef. Hold on.
Okay.
You know, because it is now Monday from Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
And Black Friday has come and gone. Did you see all of the videos that show all of the same fucking prices on things?
No.
Oh, my God. There's so many of them. There's so many like TikToks and things, but they're literally like going around Walmart or Target. I think it's Target. And the Black Friday signs are black and then the regular Target signs are red, and they would literally like pull it up in the little, like, I used to know the real word for this thing, the sign thing.
Oh, I know what you're talking about, like the sale sign. That's not what it's called, but yeah.
Where she would just like pull it up and it would be like, oh, this seems like a good deal, pulls it up, same exact thing.
Well, Margie and I decided to just go around on Black Friday, like at the end of the night, because we had nothing else to do. We kind of kept forgetting it was a holiday Friday. Like Black Friday is not a holiday, but like a holiday weekend type thing.
Yeah.
And so we had to go to the store to get something anyways. I don't even remember what we had to get, but it was something actually logical. Like we needed like almond milk or something. Like we needed something.
Yeah.
So we ended up going to Target. And when we go to Target, the way they set up their Black Friday, all their stuff was just mixed in with the normal stuff.
Yeah.
And then it just had like a sign saying what it was.
Yep.
I mean, that's the same thing they did for Amazon Days. Remember when Amazon Days happened and people were like,
yeah, like, is it actually a deal? Like, no. So, okay, now I'm ready to learn.
Okay. You ready to learn about Sarah Stern?
Yes.
This case takes place on December 3rd, 2016. It's a pretty recent case.
That's like this weekend.
So on December 3rd, 2016, authorities got a phone call from a man named TJ Pingator, and he said there was an abandoned 1994 Oldsmobile Delta 88 that was left on the side of a bridge on the Shark River of Route 25 in Belmar, New Jersey. The police asked if anyone was in the vehicle, and the caller said that he didn't see anyone in there, and that really worried him because it's like, it's not just like a little rinky-dink bridge. It's like a big, like, two-lane, so four-lane, I guess that's.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a jumper bridge.
It's a bit
what they call it. Right. I don't like that term, but that's essentially what they call it in the documentary.
Yeah.
So authorities ran the information about the car and they get a hit. So they end up calling the person that owns the vehicle. And I found two different things about this. I've heard in some things that Michael owns the car, and then some things I've heard that Michael's mom owns the car, but the plates were in his name. So either way, the police get Michael Stern's information. So police call Michael Stern and ask why the car is just left randomly on the side of a bridge. And he's like, what are you talking about at first? And they were like, is it just broken down? Because that's what they were thinking, is maybe the car just broke down and someone like picked someone else up.
Right.
Well, Michael gets that phone call and it's the middle of the night also. And he tells the authorities that it's actually his daughter, Sarah Stern's car. Sorry. And she normally drives the car, but currently he's on vacation in Florida, so he can't help out. And authorities just pretty much hang up on Michael. They don't tell him anything else. And Michael's super confused because he's like, well, where's Sarah?
Right. And it's kind of shitty to do. But oh, sorry, sir. We're looking into it. No. Click.
Bye. But the authorities are like, oh, shit, we need to get to the bottom of it. So they hang up.
Right.
So the authorities don't give him information. And so he figures out the only thing that he knows at this point is that the car was found abandoned on the side of a bridge. So Michael's super worried and he starts calling Sarah. He gets no response. Mind you, it's the middle of the night. However, Sarah's the type of person where she's a teenager. She's 19. She always has her phone on her. Mm. So Michael instead decides to start calling back the number that called him, and he gets through, and it's the Monmouth County Prosecutor's Office. So he's like freaked out. It starts raising alarms left and right to him. He's like, why would these people be calling me? So since Michael's now freaking out, Michael instantly gets in his car in Florida and he starts to drive all the way back to New Jersey to find out what happened to Sarah. And if you watch the Dateline 2020, they're like, so you just started driving? And it's not funny, but like the way he says it, he's so like almost monotone about it. And he's like, well, yeah, because at 3 a.m, the roads aren't that busy. You just get on the road and you just start driving. And like, it's really sad.
Yeah.
But the way he does it, like, if you didn't know the context to it, it's kind of like, well, yes, you're not wrong, sir. Like,
yeah,
it's the middle of the night. Michael starts his drive. He is on his way because he now wants to figure out what happened to Sarah. So who is Sarah? Right. Who's the Sarah Stern girl? It's his daughter. Just so you do know, like,
gather that.
Well, I didn't want anyone to think maybe potentially it was his wife, because I did say earlier it's his daughter, but maybe someone like just missed over that, because, you know, maybe you're at work when you're listening. Maybe you omitted that one word when I saw it and someone's like, ooh, it's his wife. And, you know, you start thinking that. And then later I say something and I'm like, she's 19 and he's 40. And you're like, damn, this is an age gap. And then you're like, oh, shit. Because I've done that. I'll be like listening to a podcast and I miss like one key thing, and then I'm like trying to piece together everything and I'm like, wait, I must have missed something somewhere. Like,
well,
what,
like,
the fuck?
Every human being on the planet, you imagine like what people look like in your brain,
your head, and everything. Yeah, you start to put a face to a picture and a picture to a face and everything.
Right. So when you're like, okay, it's his wife, oh, it's his daughter, fuck, now you gotta
change
your entire,
everything,
like, yeah, imagination.
Yeah.
It's like reading.
So Sarah Stern is 19 years old. She's a girl that lives in Neptune City, New Jersey. Beautiful sounding place. Love Neptune City.
Right? Is it actually nice?
Yes.
Okay.
It's so cute. Neptune City is actually a smaller city. It's nothing like the rest of New Jersey. It's a really small area. The population's only about 4,000 pieces.
pieces. People.
Wow, we said that really in unison. I don't think we've ever been so in unison in my life.
I can't wait to hear that in the record.
So serious, people.
People. But wow. We said it at the same like cadence too, wow. Which just makes it even better.
Oh, I love that word cadence. That and candor are two of my favorite words.
I love candor.
I love candor.
I loved candor ever since Divergent. Yeah.
I knew you were going to say that. Okay. Whew. Sorry, guys. 4,000 people.
People.
People. Neptune said he has lovely beaches. It's just like beautiful area. Random fun fact. Jack Nicholson was born there.
Oh.
Love that for him.
Interesting.
But if you look at pictures of this place, like the beaches are so beautiful and they're like so like nice. And everyone's like, it is the least thing you think of when you think of New Jersey, because people think of Jersey and they're like, hey, it's Jersey, Jersey Shore and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's what they were saying in some of these documentaries and stuff that I was watching, or like other podcasts or anything that I consumed about the Sarah Stern case. Like every single person was like, oh, when I think of Jersey, I think of like Jersey, and everyone was acting that part out.
Right.
And they were doing it. And then they're like, oh, this is not that part of Jersey. Another thing about Neptune City, while you're looking this up, is mm-hmm. Neptune City calls itself a small town because they say it's a place where everybody knows everybody. Everyone knows like their neighbor, you know, like everyone knew who Sarah was. Keep that in mind, because when someone goes missing in this small town of only 4,000 people, you know, someone's missing. So Sarah was a very active person. She played softball when she was younger, but then when she got older, she moved more into like the artistic realm. And in the Dateline 2020, they talked to one of her softball friends, and they also show her dad showing a bunch of her like artwork from growing up, and he saved everything. He Aww. Saved every piece of artwork this girl's ever done, I swear. She ended up being voted best artist as her high school's superlative, and she ended up graduating from Neptune High in 2015. From there, she continued to be an aspiring artist who attended Brookdale Community College, where she studied arts and TV production. Sarah was described as happy, friendly, creative, sweet, and artistic. She personally described herself as a reckless optimist, saying that she could find the bright side of things no matter what. Sarah's friends always loved her and spoke really highly of her. And when you're watching any of the documentaries or anything about her, you really see that come full circle, because they're all like, they're just so hurt that Sarah's gone. You can tell they're all emotional. They're all speaking so highly of her, and no one can say anything bad about her. Not a single person. When Sarah was a freshman, she had something troubling happen in her life. It was in 2013. Her mother died from a really long and really tough battle with cancer. And because of this, it brought Sarah and her father a lot closer, because they started to lean on one another.
That is so hard.
Yes.
I can't even imagine.
Sarah's father wasn't her only like support system. She also had some really close friends that she kept like really near and dear to her. So her best friend was a boy named Liam McAtasney. And her and Liam had been best friends for a while. Sarah met Liam and his twin brother Seamus during Sunday school when they were about 6 years old. But then she became really good friends with them in middle school around seventh grade. She specifically got really close with Liam, not as much with Seamus, but she was friends with both. Then Liam and Sarah had a like third friend that they befriended in high school when they were like freshmen. And it was another kid in their grade named Preston. And Preston even grows up to take Sarah to her junior prom. And all three were the same age. They attended and graduated high school together. After school ended, the two boys ended up becoming roommates, but all three of them remained close. And Sarah never like dated either of them. They were all just three best friends. She did have a girl best friend also. It was one of her closest friends named Carly Draper. And Carly was her neighbor and also one of her best friends. Sarah was super well known in the town. And so when she ends up going missing that day, it's pretty shocking to everyone. So we were talking about what happened on the car on the bridge, right? On December 3rd. Let's go back to that. On December 3rd at 3:17 a.m., the car was towed from the bridge after another call was placed. This time it was from an Uber driver that had called in to the Neptune City authorities. the Uber driver called in saying he thought he saw a male figure near the car walking around, which was like weird, right? Because at this point, the authorities had already talked to Michael Stern and they were like, no, it should be a girl. And they were like, what? No, I see a man walking around the car. And they're like, but it's Sarah's car. Why would a male, like, we have a missing female, not a missing male. There shouldn't be a male walking around her car.
A little sus.
Mm-hmm. So now at this point, authorities arrive at Sarah's house to try to find an answer to all the random questions that have started accumulating. There was body cam footage of this, and so you can see it on a lot of the docuseries. Body cam footage shows the officers searching the area around Sarah's house and the perimeter of it while knocking at her residence to try to see if she'll open. But again, it's also the middle of the night. Sergeant Hines was communicating with Officer Morgan at the house, like through like walkie-talkies. And he's just knocking and knocking and he's like, no one's answering. So they realize that Sarah's back door is unlocked and her lights are on. So they decide they're going to go inside and check things out.
And they have probable cause.
Yeah.
So
when they go inside the house, they don't see Sarah anywhere, but they hear her dog, Buddy, and he's in his cage. And everyone was like, well, this is weird because normally Buddy gets free roam of the house. And the fact that he's crated is really odd. And someone actually like mentions that in this, but it's so cute. When you see the Dateline, if you watch the Dateline, the body cam footage, the police officer is like, Sarah, are you home? Sarah, are you in the house? Oh, hi, puppy, puppy. Hi, puppy, puppy. Are you in your cage, puppy, puppy?
It breaks character from being so serious.
He instantly goes into puppy dog mode.
I love that.
He sees Buddy and it's so cute. And Buddy's just like hanging out in his cage. Right, like
wagging around.
So authorities end up going next door to talk to the neighbor, which the neighbor is Robin Draper. So they're like, hey, what happened? Blah, blah, blah. They're asking questions. Robin mentioned how earlier that day, Sarah and her best friend Liam had came over and stored some of Sarah's mother's things at Robin's house, which she had done in the past. But this was a little worrisome to Robin, but not so much that she like thought anything. Like she didn't think that, because you know how people say like when you are suicidal, you give your possessions away.
Yeah.
Robin said it didn't seem like that, but it did seem a little worrisome that Sarah was like doing it again, because usually she did that when something was wrong, but she didn't say it seemed that bad. But she also mentions the whole thing about Buddy being in his crate. And she's like, you know, Buddy's never crated. So that was really weird. I think someone was in the house that wasn't Sarah. So the police now have a few different like random facts that they're still trying to sift through at this point, because now they have like all these random puzzle pieces, but they don't have any answers. But they now know that Liam McItasney saw Sarah that day. So they decide to go to Liam McItasney's house. At 4:01 a.m. at this point, Sergeant Bradley Hines gets to Liam's house and he starts knocking on the door. And Liam wakes up. He answers the door. He's super groggy. And the police start instantly questioning him. They were like, did you see Sarah earlier today? Like, when did you see her? What time did you see her? What were you guys doing? How long did you see her for? Like, they are on it.
And he's like, asleep.
Yes.
That's the worst time.
He's asleep in the doorway.
Do you love it when people ask you questions and you're like literally so tired, like you're trying to form sentences and it's just like, what? Like, yeah. Yeah. Corey gets really mad at me, sleeping me, mind you, not me, sleeping me, because he will try to cuddle me at like 3 a.m. when he gets into bed, when he's like, when it's like the weekend and I'm a lame adult and go to bed early. And my body, like my mind is not okay with cuddling at 3 a.m. Me personally would be fine with that. But me sleeping is not okay with that. And I get really angry.
You guys want to hear something really funny? Side note, this is a tangent, but Corey does this thing. Like, oh God. After living with Corey, I've now realized it's the most stressful thing about any human ever.
Yeah.
Corey doesn't know how to read time when he's tired. It doesn't matter. Like, you know how some people, like, you take a nap and it's, you wake up and it says 4 o'clock. And so you're like, oh no, is it 4 a.m. or 4 p.m.? Well, if it's 4 p.m., you know, like, oh no, I slept 24 hours. But if it's 4 a.m., oh no, I got to get ready to get to work. It doesn't matter what time it is. It could be 11, 12, 1, 2, 3, 4, 9, 11, 13. Like, it could be set on military time. It does not matter.
No.
Whatever time Corey wakes up, it's that moment he has to be at work. Yeah. So Corey will wake up randomly on accident and he'll just be like, fuck, I'm late for work. And he'll start screaming, getting ready, doing everything.
He doesn't say I'm late for work. He says fuck multiple times. And it's just so loud. It's just like, fuck, fuck.
And he'll start like getting ready so fast. It's gotten to the point where I've heard this man get all the way downstairs, start his motorcycle. And then I hear him go, God damn it. And sulk his ass back up the stairs and return to his bed. He started the motorcycle and everything.
Yeah.
And then had to go back to bed because he realized it was only like midnight.
Yep.
And somehow he saw 12, knew it was pitch black outside, and thought that somehow he was late was for noon. His 4 a.m. work. How this man operates as a normal human being in society is beyond me.
That happened when we were living in an apartment on the 5th floor. And he didn't notice it until he got into his vehicle and it was like how it is now, like snowy and stuff like that. Oh, and no. So he was just like sitting there, like waiting for his car to warm up, but like listening to like
it started dawning on him.
And he's like, fuck.
It's so funny too, because he's so angry. He's fuck, fuck, fuck. And then the moment he realizes it, the fucks change their tone. He's like, fuck. Oh, fuck. And then you just hear him quietly go back to bed.
Yeah.
Just so quietly and calmly, too. And like, it's just so funny. It woke me up every single time.
Every time.
Ever yeah. did it.
Yep.
And it's just the damnedest, funniest thing, really. But it's not funny for Corey. I'm sure it's very traumatizing. Yeah. And I don't know if it's like that he's just so tired he can't read numbers or what happens, but
I have no idea.
Corey is tired and nothing makes sense all of a sudden. The world is over.
And he must be at work immediately. Yeah. Yeah.
That might be my favorite tangent we've ever done.
Yep.
Corey's sleeping patterns.
Yep.
Going back to where we were at in the episode, Liam's sleep patterns. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they go to Liam's house at 4 a.m. and they start questioning Liam McIntosh at his door, which he's sleeping. So he's giving them very like, not short, but kind of like gruff answers. He's like, yeah, I saw Sarah. Well, yeah, I saw, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And he's not being rude or anything, but he is answering them. So this is available on body cam footage. He mentions he saw Sarah earlier that day. He went to work then around 4:30. He's a server in a steakhouse that's like local. And he said he had the dinner shift, so he worked till 10 p.m. Then authorities are like, OK, well, can you tell us like if anything's happened since then? And Liam's like, well, actually, I lost my phone, so I have no idea if Sarah's even tried to contact me at all today. But I hung out with Sarah. We went and grabbed some lunch at Taco Bell together before my shift. And then because of that, I haven't talked to her all day because my phone's been missing. So authorities were like, OK, he hasn't talked to her. He doesn't know why her car is on the bridge. So they instead they ask him about his interactions that he had that day with Sarah instead, because remember they had the weird thing about her bringing her stuff over to the her Robin's house. Yeah. Which the stuff was, if you go according to the Dateline, which I watched a lot of things beside the Dateline, but the Dateline genuinely is the best for information. Mm-hmm. It was boxes of old VHS movies. Some that like looked like they maybe could have been home movies, but it looked like old like Disney movies and stuff like that. So maybe like movies she watched with her mom and stuff, I assume, if it was like what I'm thinking about. So they instead start like asking him about that stuff. They're like, OK, like, what did you guys do that day? How was she acting? And then Liam puts a new piece of information into the puzzle. He says Sarah has been having a really tough time and she's really been wanting to get away. She's been mentioning she wants to move to Canada. He also says Sarah and her father have been fighting nonstop lately and their relationship took a really bad turn for the worse and they no longer see eye to eye and they don't get along anymore. So due to all these like small things that keep happening, the authorities are like, OK, maybe Sarah did commit suicide. Maybe she jumped off the bridge. Like it doesn't seem completely out of left field. If she was depressed, she gave her stuff away. Her dad's gone. This is the perfect time to do it.
Right.
She crated her dog because maybe like she didn't want, I don't know, like him getting out, I guess. I don't really know that part. But
yeah,
she mentioned she wanted to leave or whatever. Maybe she was just trying to say that so people don't come looking for her. Also, she was depressed. She was fighting with her dad. Her dad apparently started a new relationship recently. Like there was all these things. So with that all being the clue, everyone's like, well, maybe she did do it. That's a jumper bridge and we don't have a body, but we do have all the remains. So the sergeant calls it in and starts relaying the things he's been finding out about the case so far. And he said, you know, he felt that Sarah supposedly from what he's heard, Sarah's been emotional. Her mom died. Her dad's in this new relationship. All these things, right? But because of all this, they're unsure if Sarah could have taken her own life or if something still happened. So at this point, the people in the community start hearing about Sarah. And like I said, everyone knows everyone. But remember her best friend, Carly, which was her neighbor, Robin Draper's daughter. So Carly mm-hmm. Draper gets called from her mom, Robin. So Carly says she thinks it's unbelievable that Sarah wouldn't have ran away, even though she did mention wanting to leave. She wouldn't have done it. So now we have another person confirming that Sarah did want to leave. But also we have someone who knew her really well that was like, no, she wouldn't have done that, especially like the way it happened.
Yeah.
So now they're like even more conflicted because they're like, well, fuck, like we're getting a lot of different answers. So dive teams start searching the river while helicopters skim the shores. Meanwhile, this river leads out to the ocean. OK, it leads out to a gulf that leads to the ocean. No one ends up finding Sarah. And her father at this point, he gets back, obviously. But they talk to him and they're like, have you and Sarah been on the Fritz? Because we heard some like rumors. And he's like, well, recently, in like the past year, Sarah and I did have an argument about the election. And that's about it. And there is something else. When Sarah's mother passed away, she did battle with suicide. But since then, she's been fine. Like, she's not like that anymore. And so at this point, the police were like, OK, well, technically, she did have both those things that people mentioned. But also, like, there's nothing pointing a finger that Sarah actually did do this. So authorities were like, maybe Liam knows something that he didn't give us because, like, he's the last person that saw her at this point. So they go back to Liam and they start asking him for more questions. So they want to know exactly what they talked about the last time that he saw her, because they were like, you know, we really need to crack down and create a timeline of that last day and all of her emotions and her conversations. This time when they interact with Liam, they notice something. Liam didn't seem worried at all about his potentially missing or dead friend, which is like weird because they're supposed to be best friends, right?
Right.
Liam was almost like super nonchalant about it, and that bothered the police. And so they kept repeating to him that they're just trying to figure out if Sarah's okay or not, because they're like, you know, like, we just want some answers because we want to know if Sarah's okay. And he's like, well, I don't know anything else. And they're like, yeah, but we literally just want to know if she's like okay. We're not thinking anyone killed her. We're not thinking that she's dead. We're not even thinking maybe she did commit suicide, but we just want to know if she's okay. And he's like, I don't know anything. Which you would think he'd be like, yeah, I want to know
me
too.
Right.
Or exactly. He'd be like, what happened to my friend? You know, so they're like not seeing eye to eye, Liam and the police.
Little sus.
On December 6th, so we're only a few days later, Sarah's family organizes a civilian search and a rescue party. There were hundreds of people that attended. Liam, Seamus, and Preston all went to it also, since they were some of Sarah's closest friends, along with Michael Stern, her father. Police end up finding that there was video surveillance on the bridge from two different angles. So they were like, this will lead to great answers. However, they come to learn that the cameras have not worked for years and no one had fixed the issues.
Can we just get past this whole the cameras don't work, so we should just leave them situation? Because it happens all the time.
The lack of clear footage, like,
right?
In some countries, those cameras are so good. And then here, a lot of times when I see camera footage, it's not. The ring light on my door right. is not that expensive.
No.
And it gets way better quality than 90% of the things I'm seeing on like news station things of crimes. So I'm just shocked. Shortly after police learn this, they end up retrieving some other video surveillance, though. They end up taking a tip where they get from Sarah's neighbors across the street, because they said their video surveillance footage actually can see the front of her house from their camera. So they end up calling up this neighbor for the video surveillance, and the neighbors give the evidence of the surveillance camera over to authorities. And it shows Liam coming over like he said he did, and then them leaving, coming back, that kind of stuff. And then him leaving around 4:45 from her house. So he was just a little off on the time. He said 4:30. It was 4:45. You know, OK, so he is a few minutes late for work, whatever. Then around 11:45 p.m., you see Sarah's car backing out of the driveway. But it's so dark, you can't see who's in the car or anything. So you would just assume that it's Sarah leaving her house. Detective Brian Wiesbott, then from the Monmouth County Prosecutor's Office, brings Liam McItasney into the station for another round of questioning.
Tell me more.
Okay, Gollum.
I did this too.
She did the creepy little hands.
Well, little hands.
They were like, hey, Liam, tell us one more time what happened that day. So Liam tells the same story that he's been telling the entire time, but now he himself lets a little few new things add to the story.
Mm-hmm.
So Liam talks about how often Sarah would threaten to kill herself to Maggie, who was Liam's ex-girlfriend. And he mentions how, like, she gets really fixated on girls, like, not in like a romantic way, but almost like a, at first he says it in like a jealousy sort of way. And then he's like, no, she just wants a friend that's a girl so bad sort of way. And then she like unloads all of her problems onto them. And like,
I've been there. I understand it completely.
It's kind of weird how he describes it, though. But then the detectives keep questioning him. And then Liam asks the detectives a question. And I'm going to go back to the 2020 about this. So in the 2020, you see it. They showed the clip of Liam being questioned. And he said, how high are the chances that Sarah did jump and her body got drifted off to the ocean and will never be seen again? And then it cuts to an interviewer who's questioning Liam's attorney. And she's like, isn't that an odd question? And the lawyer gets so serious so fast. He goes, you know, everyone always asks me about that. And I don't get why people are fascinated with that part of the case. The question is literally, like, I don't get why people are so uppity about that part, because it's literally just Liam, a friend to Sarah, trying to figure out what happened to his best friend. But detectives are like, if Liam was worried about his friend, he would ask what happened to his best friend or how he could find her and stuff like that. He wouldn't be asking, you know, why her body's out at the ocean. And like, his lawyer gets
just like freaked
so
out.
So serious. So fast. And then we were just like, right. No, it's a weird question, my dude, because you wouldn't instantly be like, hey, hopefully my friend's body's gone forever. You would be much more mourning about it. And like, that's what she's trying to present.
Yeah.
But the attorney does not take it that way. He's like, why does everyone get fixated on that? He's trying to paint it as like a, no, that is his way of mourning. He's like, oh my God, what if I never see her again? She's drifted out to the ocean. So it's very,
I feel like that would take a little bit longer of time than.
Well, okay. I will tell you now, Sarah's body, even in 2023, has still never been discovered.
Uh-huh.
We still don't have it. A big part of the reason why is because the way the tides work in that area and the time of day it was and how fast the currents were going and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
The time that her body was dumped, and that's a sad term, sorry, yeah. But the time her body was dumped, and then by the time they decided to look in the right area, because remember, they thought maybe she could have jumped, but they were trying to figure out answers first. So by the time they actually started scouring the water, they were scouring close to the river, but by that time, her body would have been closer to the Gulf. Mm. Then by the time they were searching the Gulf, her body would have been in the ocean.
Gotcha.
So technically,
and they were one step behind every time.
Yes. Technically, her body could have been in the ocean. After the conversation with like the attorneys and all these people and stuff, Liam McIntosny's interviews and stuff. Liam says if he knew Sarah was going to jump off the bridge that day, he would have never went to work that night. And that's why he thinks she actually left and went to Canada, because he wouldn't have left a friend if he thought his friend was suicidal.
I guess that's fair.
That's fair if it's
true.
True.
Right.
Yeah. Authorities then ask Liam if he went with Sarah to the bank that day. And he says he did. And they were like, OK, why'd you omit that the first time we asked you? Liam says it's just one of those things he forgot to tell them because it seems so like nonchalant and like just like a trivial thing.
Like a normal errand.
Yeah. Because yeah. It was on the way back from Taco Bell. It didn't seem like a big deal because they literally just like they leave, they go get the Taco Bell, they stop by the bank real quick, then they go back to the house, they eat, they play video games, and then he just leaves and goes to work. Authorities then ask Liam if he knew what was in the bank, like in her safety deposit box, because that's what she has at the bank. She doesn't have an account. She has a safety deposit box. He says, yeah, it's like, I don't really know what it is, but it's like $20,000 to maybe $100,000, but I don't really know. So first he says he doesn't know, but then he says he thinks what it might be, and then he says he doesn't know again. And then he's like, but again, it's not a big deal. It was just an errand along the way. So put a pin in that whole thing.
Okay. Putting a pin in it.
After these interactions, Megan, which is Liam's mom, Megan McIntosny, hires an attorney for Liam. And she's like, you are not going to be doing any future questioning or interviews without a lawyer or attorney present. Because up to this point, all of Liam's interviews with like police and detectives were just Liam.
That's actually surprising that it didn't happen sooner.
Yeah. So now they start questioning Preston Taylor because that's Liam's roommate. and also like one of her best friends, remember? On December 7th, Preston was then questioned about where he, like, they ask him a bunch of questions, but the big point is people were like, hey, do you think Sarah could have jumped? And he, like, puts his hand up to his face and wipes away a tear really dramatically when he's, like, talking about it. And he, like, kind of cries. So they were like, okay, that's a little bit of a different reaction than what Liam's was, who's also supposed to be her best friend.
Right.
After both these interviews, the detectives say something seems off with the statements from both boys, and it feels like they just have some missing, like, information somewhere. Also, there were news reports running around, like, not running around, running on the air, asking around for any and all tips about where Sarah was or what happened or if anyone's seen her or knew anything to come forward. This news also happens to have one of the biggest twists in the case. They talk about how something happened in that security box. So the news is running about how Sarah is missing. And someone that works at the bank and Sarah's family member, one of her cousins, sees this, and she's going to end up getting a call from the bank. So mind you that this news report becomes critical. So Sarah ended up having some hidden money that she inherited. When her mother passed away, she started cleaning out an old family home in Avon, which I think it's Avon. I thought that was Avon because the Avon lady
definitely looks like Avon.
After her mother passed, she was cleaning out an old family home in Avon, where she found a shoebox, and it had potentially $25,000 in it. When Sarah found this, she called and told her aunt, Linda Stightley, about it, who advised her to never tell anyone about this money ever. So Sarah ended up putting it in a safety deposit box at Kearney Bank in Bradley Beach. After the news reports hit, one of Sarah's cousins gets a message from Kearney Bank, who tells her that Sarah was seen visiting the bank that same day she disappeared, and she made a withdrawal from the safety deposit box, which she doesn't normally do. So they were like, hey, this is something to note. So authorities now get subpoenas issued because they need that to look into the bank footage, the records, and everything else they need. So they start to get all that, and they follow up with the tips from the bank. They find out that Sarah went into the bank alone that day. So that kind of put a nail in their whole idea that maybe, like, Liam did something.
Mm-hmm.
And she got into the safety deposit box that day, just like they were told. And when authorities go to open up Sarah's safety deposit box, they see like $25,000-ish in it. But they notice something. The money that was in the safety deposit box was not in good condition. In fact, most of it was unusable cash because of the condition. There was water damage. It was stuck together. It was old. It was disintegrating. Like, they said that you would pick up some of the bills and they would just fall apart. Overall,
oh, interesting.
Yeah, they said that more money in the box was damaged than it was actually usable. Now, do you remember that pin earlier where I was like, hey, put a pin in the whole concept of Liam saying repeatedly, like, it was just a nonchalant thing. We went to the bank on the way home. Well, here's why that's important. There's all these correlating videos of camera evidence from the bank, the neighbor camera, all this stuff, right? Well, they show that Sarah left her house with Liam once to go get Taco Bell, and then twice to go to the bank before he went to work. They left the house twice. Two separate adventures.
Adventures.
So that throws a huge wrench in Liam's whole story about, like, it being like just a little stop on the way home. And that's why he forgot to mention it. Because now the truth is, why would he forget to mention that they went specifically out just to go to the bank? Right.
It was a whole ordeal instead of it just being like, oh, I need to stop at the bank on the way home type of situation.
It was now a special secondary trip just to go to the Kearney Bank. So authorities no longer believed Sarah ran away, because if she would have ran away, they think she would have grabbed what usable cash was in there that day, along with her social security card, ID, credit cards, money, wallet, passport, and all of that they found in Sarah's home, along with Canadian money that she had in her home. Again, the story is she ran away to Canada.
Right.
And they found Canadian money along with all these other things that you desperately would need. And her car, even. And her dog.
Well, you can't travel there without an ID of some sort.
Any of this.
And if you didn't have, like, a passport or one of those special IDs.
So the police at this point are like really, really irritated because they can tell that Leah McEtasny is lying to them. But also they can tell that there's a bunch of missing information that they keep having to piece together themselves because they are not getting the answers they want from anyone else. So they have multiple police departments searching for Sarah, like multiple departments at this point, because, again, Neptune City is a small area and the river could have wound her body somewhere else is what they're nervous of, too. At this point, they were really upset because they didn't know what was happening because they still didn't have a body. It's as like Taylor Swift once said, no body, no crime.
Okay.
Sorry, I had to. But they were afraid that this would turn into a cold case was the truth of it. And they didn't want this to turn into a cold case where they have no answers. So they were like, we need to find that missing pin here, right?
Mm-hmm.
It sounds far away, but in January of 2017, it wasn't far away. It's only a month, but like since it's a whole year away in a sense, it sounds far.
Yeah. Okay.
Because this was December 2016.
Yeah.
But then when I say January, it sounds like, oh my God, it's like a month and a half.
Yeah.
No, it's only a month. In January of 2017, there's a huge, huge break in the case. Like this could not have been more perfect of a break. Authorities at Monmouth County Prosecutor's Office get a phone call. This dude, he's a fellow classmate and a friend of Liam McEtasny. His name is Anthony Curry. He calls the prosecutors and he says he has some odd information that could shed some light on the situation about Sarah Stern. Anthony Curry is an aspiring filmmaker who was dubbed by his high school the most likely to become famous, which, oh boy, does he.
Oh boy.
Anthony says he and Liam weren't close friends till they were juniors in high school. But then they started bonding over things like movies and stuff like that because they're both like cinephiles, which is people that like movies. And then he said he has some information that he wants to tell authorities about him and Liam's friendship. Liam actually talked with him on Thanksgiving of 2016. So November, so like a month before Sarah, about a plot for a movie he has that Anthony should make. And remember, Anthony is an aspiring filmmaker and they both like horror movies, mind you. Liam says the story should be about a dude who kills his friend by strangling her, like some girl, and then throwing her off a bridge.
And interesting.
He was
very specific.
Very specific. He was so excited to tell Anthony about this plan. And at first, Anthony's like, you know, I just wanted to believe Liam. It was some weird horror film because like he was so excited. Like, I don't know. I was just like, yeah, that's cool, dude. OK, cool. But then Anthony ends up later seeing all this stuff about Sarah on the news and he's like, that weird. Lines up almost too much.
Right.
And then it got weirder. Liam starts contacting Anthony on Snapchat and asking him to like meet up and like things like that. And the authorities ask him in the interview, they're like, so how often was he interacting with you? And he's like, every single day. And he kept asking me, like, have you talked to police yet? Do you want to meet up? Do you want to talk to me? What's been happening? What are you talking to people about? And he's like, it got weird. So then on January 31st, 2017, Anthony meets with Liam. So Anthony decides to meet up with the authorities first and they bug his car, specifically wiring the car with a recording device to capture video and like recording noise, which it's
dang.
It's so funny if you watch the recording of the recordings and stuff, because they're like, so to test everything out and to make sure everything was as legit as possible, because this is 2016. They have most of their shit with video cameras figured out by this point in life. The authorities are like, okay, Anthony, we're going to put this in your car. Now go drive around, play your music, you know, turn your heating on, turn your AC on, sing along to the radio, turn the radio up and down and stuff. So in the video, it just cuts randomly. They're like, so Anthony, how often was Liam contacting you? And he's like, every single day. And then all of a sudden it cuts to a clip of him singing in his car, driving around in New Jersey.
I
and
love
you're
this.
Like, you're like, what the fuck? And then you find out it's because
they were testing
the car. Yeah. But at first, until you know that they're testing the car, they're like, why do they have so much footage of him driving around in his car, singing,
just hanging out,
turning on his AC repeatedly?
That's funny.
But it's because they were like, what if Liam thinks his car is bugged and he's like, turn on everything, you know, so that they can't hear us or something, because they think that Liam's kind of losing it at this point also.
Yeah.
So they wanted to have. So Anthony agrees to meet with Liam on Ocean Avenue in Bradley Beach. Now his car is wired. He is helping the authorities. He got this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Liam shows up. He parks his car a few spots away and he waits a minute or two. And then he comes over and then instantly Liam gets in the car and he goes, I got to check if you're wearing a wire. Just in case. I do this all the time.
Oh, okay. This is a normal thing for you.
Do you check your friends for wires every time they get in your car?
No.
I don't think I've ever done that. Should I start? Is that a thing?
No.
Okay. So Liam checks Anthony for a wire the moment he gets in the car. Safe, right? This is already setting up for a great idea. Mm-hmm. And at this point, Anthony's like, oh, shit, things are real. Like, Anthony later tells the authorities, he's like, that made me realize it. Because I'm like, why else would you check me for a wire unless something's about to go down? You're going to tell me something I'm not supposed to hear. And no one else ever is.
Yep.
Authorities had warned Anthony beforehand that he would have to probably ask questions and get the information. But instantly, Liam just gets in the car and starts incriminating himself nonstop. Actually, the dude wouldn't shut the fuck up. He talks for 30 minutes
Jesus.
In Anthony's car, telling every detail.
He probably couldn't hold it in any longer.
Down to the fact that he's bragging about how he killed her, how he what he did with her body, how he planned this out, every single thing. Liam tells Anthony that he felt like the FBI was after him and that the police are, and I quote, on his ass about the case. He also says He also says things like, it took me half an hour to kill her. The worst part is I thought I was walking out with 50,000 to 100,000 in my pocket. She had one safe that she took the money out of it. She only had $10,000 in there. I'm sorry. The worst part after taking half an hour to kill her.
Your best friend.
The money?
I mean, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Your best friend.
He said he's mad because he only walked out with a quarter of the money he was expecting. And the money he killed Sarah was useless.
Like, okay.
Because it was, you know, unusable money. Liam says what he did was he snuck up behind her, picked her up from behind while her feet were dangling off the ground while choking her. He said she was saying his name, pleading for her life, but it kind of annoyed Liam. So he stuffed a scarf down her throat. But then she started having a seizure on the floor while vomiting because of that. And at one point, she actually urinates herself, he says. So he got a shirt and shoved it down her throat to stop her from getting sick and then put a finger over her nose and then set a timer on his phone to see how long it would take her to die from that point on.
Jesus.
And Liam said he timed the killing with an app on his cell phone. Meanwhile, Sarah's dog laid there and watched the entire thing very calmly, not knowing something was wrong. And he makes fun of the dog for this. He's like, imagine how stupid her dog is for like watching her, literally just sitting there and watching her die. Like, what a dumb dog. Like, I'm over here killing her and you're not going to do anything about it. But again,
her best friend.
This was her best friend.
Right.
Who normally was at her house all the time.
Right.
Buddy was a good dog. Don't ever take the dog's name in vain.
No, no.
So then he mentions how, because he was doing this, he drops his phone. And Anthony's like, yeah, man, I heard that. How do you lose your phone? And he goes, I don't know. I was too busy strangling someone to think about my phone. Then he moves on. And he says, after he killed her, he took her body and he had to hide it in the bushes because he has to go to work. He then returned that night to get rid of the body. He also stole the safe that she had taken the money out that day from. And he placed Sarah's body in the passenger seat of her own car and drove to the bridge. Preston, his roommate, was following in a second car that he called the escape car while they used walkie-talkies to communicate. Once they were at the bridge, he said he parked the car and started dragging Sarah's lifeless body towards the edge of the bridge. But three cars started approaching and it made him really nervous because he saw the lights and everything. So he said he had to run and put the body back into the car and wait for the vehicles to pass because, you know, like he was afraid it could be cops. And turns out he wasn't strong enough to lift her body.
Okay.
So I have this clip of what he says in the recording of the car, the car recording, whichever you want to call it.
Recar.
In the recar. It's kind of long. It's like 4 minutes long and it's kind of hard to hear things like that. But it's really worth listening to because it's the hook and sinker of this whole case. And it's what nails Liam in the end. But also it's important to hear his tone and everything and stuff. And like I just want you guys to hear this stuff. Because he's later going to say, well, everything I told Anthony in the car after checking him for wire, that was for a script for a movie also.
I haven't heard the clip, guys. So is it also kind of the same as the clip from Cassie's?
Similar. It's just two dudes talking in a car.
Yeah.
And he's repeatedly like using Sarah's name even. So he's like, so Sarah did that. Well, when I was choking Sarah. Well, when I killed Sarah. Well, when Sarah. Well, Sarah's dog.
And but it's for
like,
a movie.
He's like, it was a movie that I'm planning. So there's no way out of him saying that this was for a script. I'm going to play it here.
Good morning. What's up, everybody? Don't We were listening live through electronic equipment.
Were they telling you what to say?
They did say, you gotta act sort of like Donnie Brasco. You gotta ask him questions.
As soon as he got there.
You shut me down for a while.
Dude, you can't blame me for doing this, right? I gotta feel you up real quick, right? No disrespect.
What were you thinking then when he did that?
It's real.
And he just spills his guts.
Mm-hmm. I didn't really have to do much work. Like, he wanted to tell me, you know? I think he wanted to get it off his chest.
Yeah, I got the FBI on my ass, dude.
About what?
About killing Sarah. They've been, they were up my ass. First, it was just normal police. They were on my ass, and I had to go in and get interrogated by them multiple times. But then it kept moving up levels, and now it's a federal case. That's not even the worst part. The worst part of it is I thought I was walking out 50 grand, 100 grand in my pocket. She had one safe, and she took money out, and she only had 10 grand. And this money, I don't know if it was burnt or something, it's old money, terrible quality. I don't even know if I can put any of it in the bank.
So what, do you have it hidden?
Yeah.
Where'd you hide it?
Sandy Hook. First it was in my house for a long time, but then I stopped trusting Preston. We threw her off the bridge.
Not only does he implicate himself in this, but he mentions somebody else who helps him dispose of the body. Police didn't know about that. They didn't even suspect that.
She goes to walk out the front door. I choke her out, drag her. My biggest problem was the dog, and her dog laid there and watched as I killed her. Didn't do anything. Dog.
I'll never forget the way that he talks about how her dog just laid there as I killed her. That was, to me, the most disturbing thing I'd ever heard in my life.
I picked her up and had her just, like, dangling off the ground, and she just pissed herself and said my name, and then that was it. And it took me a half an hour to kill her. I thought I was going to be able to choke her out and have her out in, like, a couple minutes.
It's heartbreaking in a sense, you know, somebody who's your good friend, you don't think they would do something like that. It's an innocent person, you know, it's disappointing.
I got a shirt and I just shoved it down her throat so she wouldn't throw up or anything, and held my finger over her nose and set a timer.
It was nauseating how anyone could talk the way Liam spoke about Sarah and Sarah's death. Was very disturbing.
You are the only person on this planet that knows, besides Preston. And Preston doesn't know that you know.
You're not no rat, bro.
It could be anyone. And I don't want Preston to think that he has to kill you and take you out because you are the only person that knows. Yeah. And I didn't get a lot of money, but I had enough money to just be, like, living comfortably in my house, throwing parties all the time.
The most egregious thing that I heard was how Liam said he didn't feel any different after doing this.
What, are you going to live some boring life?
What were you thinking?
He did a terrible thing. That's really all there is to it. He did a terrible thing.
So then Anthony Curry goes back to the authorities after doing this, which also you have to think of how terrifying it would be to be Anthony and knowing you're in this car, like having this conversation with Liam. And then Liam nonetheless is threatening him during this, because at one point, like, I'll get into it, what he says, but it's just wild because the authorities will call this recording the undeniable confession to murder. But the whole clip is wild because Liam is just, like, too honest, talking about everything, about how he killed Sarah, how she peed herself, how her dog was there, every single thing. And then he goes on to, like, talk about threatening Anthony, because he's like, yeah, you can't tell anyone about this because, like, you know, imagine how pissed Preston will be if he finds out. And, like, he says something, he's like, you know, Preston will have to come after you too. And at this point also, authorities were like, whoa, Preston was part of this? Because they only thought Liam was.
Right.
They genuinely did not have anything on Preston at this point,
because he cried.
Mm-hmm.
I'm quote air quoting that cried.
And so they were like shocked at this point. Like if Liam did not do this, Preston would have never been booked. So, well, I mean, maybe not never, but like Preston wouldn't have gotten this part.
Yeah.
Authorities were like, OK, I guess we're going to get Preston first because maybe Liam's not going to talk to us. Liam loves to talk, but he's not going to talk to us. And they're like, well, maybe Preston will talk and we'll get it over quickly. So on February 1st, we're now, because this happened in December, so we're now in February, the authorities pick up Preston on his way to Brookdale Community College while he was driving to class, literally. And they were like, hey, they book him on something else, like on like not speeding, but something similar. And they're just like, oh, hey, can you like pull over? And then they're like, come to the prosecutor's office now. The authorities tell Preston they want him to cooperate and that they know everything. So Preston instantly gives in. Meanwhile, Liam is super unaware that Preston was apprehended by police or that the police know everything.
I love that.
And at one point, you can see a clip of Preston's like interrogation with the police. And the officer goes, we know what happened to Sarah and we know your involvement in it and what it was. And Preston goes, right. The officer goes, we want to know why Liam did what he did. Preston goes, what he did? Officer, he killed Sarah, okay? You know that, correct? Preston goes, yeah, correct.
Okay.
Okay. Like, okay.
Done.
Yeah, that's okay. So the lawyer said they feel like they had never seen someone admit to guilt that fast. Preston then confirmed every single detail in a 52-page record that went along with every single thing Liam had said in the car with Anthony, all the details. Therefore, police now know that the fake script with Anthony is not a fake script and it's actually a really real event, which they already knew, but now they have the actual backup with. Preston then takes the authorities back to the scene of the crime to reenact the entire timeline and show them everything. So,
ugh, that's chilling.
Yeah, and you watch it. So Preston and the authorities go back to Sarah's house where he starts talking about everything. He starts with showing where when he got to the house where Sarah's body was stored slumped over in a corner, leaning over a toilet. And he talks about it so carelessly. He's like, oh, she was over there, just like leaning over the toilet. And then he says, I had to carry her. I had to like pick her up. I had to carry her outside and hide her in the bushes while Liam's at work. And the officer's like, How were you carrying her? Like, were her legs dragging? He's like, oh, yeah, yeah. Her, yeah, it was like this. Like, I was carrying her like this. And he, like, puts his arms out. He's like, her legs were just dragging and stuff. And he's just so, like, cold and heartless about
like,
it.
Like, nonchalantly talking about dragging a body.
And it was someone he was supposed to be best friends with. And, like, right. It was also someone that he went to prom with. Like, he has these memories with. Like, you have to think about that.
Yeah, that's the chilling part where it's, like, you had nights with friends, this person. Yeah,
yeah
like... meaningful conversations, like meaningful events.
Memories
with this person.
And everything. Yeah. He then says that Liam went back into the house that night to get the safe that she had withdrew from the bank that day. And then he had to throw Sarah over a fence to hide her bodies from the camera. And they get really in depth talking about how they were like concealing her body from the cameras of the neighbors. Like they knew they were there and they like took her out back. They had to throw her over a fence, throw her under this bush, drag her through another bush, like all this stuff. To get her into the side of the car so that you couldn't see her. And they like had to back the car into the driveway. Like they planned this out. He then talks about how they took Sarah's lifeless body to the bridge, how Liam wasn't strong enough to throw her body over the bridge. And he, I think at this point, says something where he's like, which I was like, yeah, man, she's dead weight. That's what happens. Preston then says Liam had radioed to him on the walkie-talkies to come help him. And as cars were passing, Liam was too afraid it could have been the police. So they kept throwing Sarah back in the car when they would see lights, but then resume when they were alone. Then Liam jumps in Preston's car and they drive away after dumping Sarah's body off the side of the bridge. Leaving her car there, Liam then buried the safe that he took from her house. And Preston looks at some maps and points out to Sandy Hook. And he said that's exactly where police will find it. It was barely buried in the ground next to a lighthouse and police discovered the safe and they found the key to the safe on Liam's keychain the next day. The safe had a little over $9,000 in it that was taken from the bank earlier that day. So at this point, Liam was arrested the same day that Preston ended up spilling the beans. On February 1st, 2017, law enforcement apprehended Liam McItasney and Preston Taylor in relations to Sarah's missing persons case. Liam was going to be charged and Preston was going to be considered an accomplice. Finally, 2 months after Sarah was last seen, Liam and Preston were going to be arrested and charged with her murder officially. Megan McItasney, which was Liam's mother, said she's in disbelief when she learned her son was going to be charged with murder. Megan said, things always wash up when they go in the water, and she grew up on a beach, and so she knows that. So since there's no body that washed up, it means Sarah actually is alive somewhere. Her body wasn't dumped in the water, and she knows that.
Okay.
She also went as far as to mention how Sarah told her daughter that she wanted to move away from New Jersey, probably to Canada or California. So she actually ran away, and now her son's being set up, if nothing else.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then originally the DA office said they would not accept a plea agreement from any party, but then they ended up giving one to Preston in the end, and he ends up testifying against Liam during court because of this. I wish I remembered where it was, if it was in an interview or during a trial, but at one point someone says something to Liam and they're like, aren't you guys like best friends or something like that? And he's like, no, it was the long game. I'm sorry, but her mom died in 2013. You were friends before that and stuff. Up after that, from 2013 till 2016, did this all become a con and like a plan and a scheme to you? Are you that demented?
Like, did they meet in middle school?
They met
like seventh grade.
They met at Sunday school when they were like six, remember?
Okay, yeah. So you weren't thinking of that when you first met. So yeah. Go fuck yourself.
You maybe, that's why I'm wondering if he meant like, when it happened, like in 2013, when he found out about the money instantly, like when her mom died, did he instantly change from like friend mode to like scheming mode?
Maybe.
That's scary. That's 3 years of scheming against your friend. Because it was Thanksgiving when he was like telling Anthony about the plan. So how long had he been planning it up to that point?
I wonder if like his long game involved like liking film.
It's not, because it gets him caught either way, but
I mean, he tried to be smart.
He
wasn't, though.
He wasn't. No. I feel like anyone that goes with some sort of a plea saying anything is for a movie is automatically like, if there's anything that Scream taught me is that if you're planning it for a movie, it's not a movie. It's murder.
Yeah.
Yeah. On May 15th, 2017, Liam was offered a plea agreement as well. He was being offered life without parole, but he didn't take it and instead pleaded not guilty on all accounts, and it will now be taken to trial, which the main reason they offered him that plea was to save Michael Stern the horror of having to go to court.
Really. Yeah, that's fair.
But it ended up lasting almost 8 weeks. On January 23rd, 2019, the trial finally begins. So this happened in December of 2016. In January 2019, we finally go to trial, and Michael Stern is finally able to like come face to face. So at this point, January 23rd, 2019 rolls around. The trial's beginning. Preston's the first to testify. Preston testifies against Liam, and he said Liam told them that they would gain between $50,000 to $100,000 by robbing and killing Sarah. At first, he says it was that they were going to be robbing Sarah, but then it moved on to robbing and killing Sarah. But in the end, they only got like $10,000. And also, his share only ended up being $3,000, and the bills were in such disrepair, they were useless. So at this point,
sucks to suck.
Well, Preston just admits he helped murder someone for $3,000.
Right. I mean, he didn't know.
I'm never going to murder someone, but Jesus Christ, for $3,000, that's not what you get paid to murder people. Preston also testified that they did a trial run of the entire event. And that's when they found out that the walkie-talkies they originally bought were not strong enough, so they were going to have to go back to the store and buy new ones, which gets put into evidence because they found the return receipts and the new receipts for the new ones that they end up buying. Then the bank manager comes and testifies, along with a specialist who talks about Sarah's body. Oh, I did mention it. This is when it happens. The specialist comes and talks about how Sarah's body could have been recovered if the right area was searched. However, due to the lack of information in the beginning, they were always one step behind. When they were searching in the Gulf, they should have been in the inlet. When they were in the inlet, they should have been in the sea, things like that. So they didn't search until it was too late, essentially, and they didn't find Sarah's body. Even in 2023, they've still never recovered Sarah's body, which even the bank manager, who saw Sarah decently regularly, but again, everyone knows everyone in this town, he was even like pretty upset on the stand. Like, everyone was upset except for Liam and Preston.
Love that.
Like, her supposed best friends. And this is my personal opinion, but if you see a few of the pictures and stuff, or like the videos, when it pans out and you see Seamus in the crowd, even Seamus looks more upset than Liam. like, Seamus wasn't even the one that was her close friend.
Right.
In February of 2019, a Monmouth County jury found Liam McItasney guilty on all 7 counts against him, including first degree murder, conspiracy, desecrating human remains, tampering with evidence, and some other charges. He was accused of strangling 19-year-old Sarah Stern. Mind you, Liam, Preston, and Sarah were all 19 at the time of this crime. In case you didn't know, like, the age group here. Prosecutors argued that Liam killed Sarah for her inheritance and that he had planned Sarah's murder for upward of 6 months before acting on it. Anthony Curry, the same guy that helped the police get the recorded confessions, was present in the courtroom during the trial. And at one point, Judge English mentioned that this case would have became an unsolved cold case if it wasn't for Anthony. And during the trial, the recordings Anthony took were shown to jurors.
It's got to be, like, kind of nerve wracking for him, like,
because if he knows, didn't get caught. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he knows that I was in cahoots, and that's just crazy.
And, like, if something would have went wrong,
right?
Anthony's first. Like, I'm
just kidding.
Now.
Like, he's not guilty.
Yeah. Liam McItasney's defense attorney, who is Carlos Diaz Cabo, said the recordings were a false confession. According to him, Liam was auditioning for Anthony, who was just a filmmaker, and that's all it was.
Yeah, okay.
The prosecutor said if New Jersey had the death penalty, they would have actually pursued it. But it doesn't exist in New Jersey, because in 2007, New Jersey abolished the death penalty. But it was telling that Liam was not only guilty because he was void of all emotion and remorse. And even when the recordings were being played, Liam had no effect. He was just sitting there, like, super monotone about it. Meanwhile, everyone else is either distraught, upset, or horrified at what he's saying.
Right.
In the end, Preston Taylor pleaded guilty before the trial. He pleaded to first-degree robbery, second-degree conspiracy to commit robbery, and second-degree disturbing or desecrating human remains. So Preston will serve 18 years in prison, which will be shorter due to his plea deal, though. Judge English sentenced Liam McItasney on June 28th, 2019, at only 20 years old, to life without parole, plus 10 additional years to run consecutively at the New Jersey State Prison in Trenton. Judge English said, "This is a really heinous event since this involved two people who knew each other since grammar school. He came up with this plan for 6 months prior and convinced someone else to take part." After the trial, Sarah's father, Michael, read an emotional impact statement, including that his life has been pure turmoil since the day Sarah disappeared, along with how many people will not miss Sarah. He said,
"I was devastated and numb from shock the day I learned from detectives Sarah was murdered. I've had horrific dreams and nightmares. The horrid act of what happened to her body haunts me every day. I will never be able to hug Sarah again." It's so sad because he was in Florida.
Yeah.
Like, he could not do anything. There was, like, I feel for this man.
After that impact statement that Michael gave, that's super depressing, but, like, it was needed.
Mm-hmm.
Liam refused to, like, give Michael any eye contact. He just wouldn't even look at him. He wouldn't even give him the respect of, like, meeting his eye line, which at first Michael did the same, but then Liam started wiping tears away after the speech, like as if he was all of a sudden remorseful. The prosecutor, Megan Doyle, claimed that his tears in court were fake and Liam had no remorse for his actions.
I mean, yeah.
After the court adjourned, Michael was asked if he had any last words for Liam, and he just said, "I have no words for him at all." Liam's mother, Megan McItasney, told interviewers for 2020 that she did not believe her son could have done this act even after everything, because Liam really was not capable of that. He loved Sarah. She said, "It's difficult because Michael Stern doesn't know where his daughter is, and that's hard, but Megan knows where her son is, and that place is prison, and that's also hard." Because she thinks he's innocent, so she's like, it's right. Not fair that my innocent child, because sure. I can't see my child either. So now everyone's affected, she says, and it's hard on everyone, and it's not fair because Liam and Megan McItasney both still claim that Liam is innocent. In January of 2023, a 3-judge panel rejected Liam McItasney's attempts to seek a new trial, which was this year. Liam claimed that he was denied a fair trial due to impermissible indoctrination of the jury. And he said there was prosecutorial misconduct because there was an incident during the trial. This really did happen. One of the jurors got on Facebook. So Liam's lawyers also claimed the jurors should not have been allowed to watch the videotape confession because it was persuasive and had no correlation to the case. Because it was, again, just him auditioning.
That would be the hardest part of being on a jury. Like, not being able to, like, get outside influence of things. Mm-hmm. Like, I could only use my phone to call and text. Like, I could not.
I don't think you're allowed to even keep your phone sometimes.
Really?
But then also, like, what if something happens in your personal life and you don't find out because you don't have your phone?
Yeah.
Do they, like, call the judge and be like, hey,
probably
XYZ's husband had a heart attack. They need to leave the jurors.
Right.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that probably does happen.
So back to the whole Facebook thing, because I need to talk about that for a minute. So I said it really did happen. It did. During the original trial, it was almost considered a mistrial and Liam potentially could have gotten off. But no. Instead, the judge ended up tossing the juror from jury duty because this juror got on Facebook and made a post saying, sitting on the jury, LMAO.
Jury 101. Don't do that.
So luckily back then, the judge deemed this juror just to be like a bad seed, threw him out, continued moving forward with the remainder of the case because Judge English thought, like, this is a serious case. We need to do it.
Right.
So in January of 2023, the three-judge panel that had Liam McItasney's attempt at the new trial was Judge Heidi Willis Kerr, Judge Jessica R. Mayer, and Avis Bishop Thompson, and they outlined in a 63-page opinion, which is like a report, that Liam's crimes were still valid and need to uphold the original sentencing because they're still fucked up. They didn't say fucked up, but you know what I mean.
But yes, they are in their, you know, legal lingo.
Jargon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Preston Taylor is currently serving his sentence at Garden State Youth Correctional Facility. He will be eligible for parole on May 20th, 2032, which doesn't sound that far away, really.
No, it doesn't, which is really sad. I don't like that.
That's less than 10 years away.
Yeah.
At his sentencing, Preston told the court, there are so many things about this scenario I wish I could take back and make right. I should have known better and done something to stop this, and I wish more than anything I had. I'm sorry.
Bullshit.
I wonder, though. I know he was really cold during that one thing, but then he cried during the other thing, and then he says this.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if he's like, okay, I'm
slightly remorseful.
Slightly remorseful, but also like, I'm the type of person where when I get really, really upset, I turn more cold than anything. Like, mm-hmm. I stop talking. Kylie's seen it firsthand. I will just shut down. And it is not because I'm trying to be mean. If anything, it's because I'm trying not to be mean because I don't know how to elicit the right emotions because my best emotion is anger. And when I'm sad, I obviously don't want to act angry and I don't want to take that anger out on someone else. So my mom taught me, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all. So I've taken that very literally. So I just shut down and I get more and more quiet. I'll just nod. I'll look angry. I look pensive. I will stand there. I will just stare you down. And I'm not trying to be mean. I just don't know what to say right now. I need to condense all these thoughts and I need to come up with a like rational, logical thing to say. So I seem more cold. And if you ask me a question, my response is super fucking plain, exactly what you're asking me. If you were going to say, you know, like, does this make you upset? And clearly I'm fucking beyond upset right now. I'm literally gonna look at you and be like, well, of course I'm upset.
Right.
But I'm going to say it just like that, which sounds really cold and like almost like sarcastic-y.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
So, of course, if you ask me, like, did you drag this person's body? I'd be like, yeah, of course I drug their body. I just said I drug their body. Did you not listen the first time I said it? Like, yeah, their feet were dragging. I told you that. Why didn't you listen? I'm not mad. I'm mad at the situation.
Yeah.
So I'm also wondering if that had a part. Like, I wonder how Preston really is feeling about everything, because there's those other little blips into Preston's like mind that make me really question. And like, maybe he was coerced into this. And like, when it comes to this case, I really am like, I have so many feelings about mostly Preston. Like, Liam, I feel like I hate this sentence, but I'm going to use it. I feel like Liam's lost cause. And I hate saying that about people. I really do. But this podcast taught me that that sentence deems true for some people on the planet.
Unfortunately.
And I do feel like Liam's lost cause. I don't think there is like a rehabilitation for him. I don't think that he can change. I think that there is something dark and like not good about him. However, I don't know if I feel that way entirely about Preston. I don't know if I trust him, obviously. I don't like want to date him. I don't want to be alone with him. I don't like have the best feelings towards this man. But at the same time, I'm wondering what like, yes, he was 19 also. He was the same age. He should have been. But also like, what was Preston's upbringing? Is he coercible? Is he like, has he always wanted a brother figure, you know? And so he was so excited to have this figure that he's known for a few years. Did he go along with the plan because of that? You know, like, I want to know more about the dynamic also like there. Yeah. Because it does remind me so much of Cassie Jo Stoddart. And if you do remember, oh my God, I'm struggling now that we're at the end. If you do remember, one of the guys was like definitely the ringleader and the other guy was kind of like the doofier, like, yeah, he was still just as bad, but he definitely was going along with it because of the friend.
Yeah.
And like,
I got that vibe too.
I'm wondering if that's kind of the present thing because like, yeah, like he's like, yeah, no duh, you couldn't lift it. It's dead weight. But like, also at the same time, he's like, okay, well, I guess I'll get out of the car and help. But at the same time, he kind of didn't want to, it seemed like. He's like, right. Okay, well, yeah, I'll put the body in the bushes, but then I'm done.
Right here.
Okay, I'll drive the car, but that's it. Like, it kept being like, he's like, well, I want to be included because it's you and I care about you, Liam. Like, you're like my role model here or something, whatever this like relationship they have in a sense is. But at the same time, it's almost like I kind of understand the right from wrong aspect of this. And so like, I don't want to be a part of it, but Liam, you want me to be part of it. So I guess
I want to like support you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm really wondering the dynamic between these two men. But otherwise, oh my God, poor Sarah, poor Michael, poor Michael Stern, because he lost his wife and then he lost his daughter.
So much.
That is so hard. I really want to know if Robin Draper is married because I feel like Robin Draper and Michael Stern should get married and then him,
that's fair.
And then he can also have Carly tell him stories about what young Sarah was like to make him remember those all the time. Beautiful little family there. That would be great for me. A little bit of closure.
I like how you're like fantasizing a whole different storyline. Like,
I just really
happy ending, okay? Just a silver lining in the craziness, please.
I feel really bad because, yeah, like you said, he was all the way in Florida. He couldn't have done anything. And I know there is no doubt in my mind this man beats himself up for that every day. And
you know,
even though his wife and daughter are already deceased, I know he's scared to do anything now. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's that thought. Yeah. Like, I can't leave my house, especially if he does have Buddy. He's like, I can't leave. What if Buddy chokes while I'm gone? What if Buddy... And you have to think about that fear of
some PTSD there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's so sad because he can't think of even like Buddy being a guard dog because he's like, oh, my God, you didn't even do the one thing a dog's supposed to do, which is like, you know, guard my child.
Right.
You let this happen. But at the same time, you're not mad because he let it happen, because how would he have known better? And I know Michael would have known to know that. Like, you know what I mean? It's just really hard on everyone in this one.
Yeah.
And for fucking money, dude.
For that. And it wasn't even nearly enough money.
Why did he ever just ask Sarah for money? Maybe like if they really were best friends and stuff. Sarah seems so nice and everything. And clearly at this point, she hadn't used a lot of the money or anything. Maybe should he have just been like, hey, Sarah, I'm really, really struggling and my parents are not helping me because, you know, I have a twin brother the same age. So they're, you know, helping him with funds to go to college. I need money, too. Hey, Sarah. You're my best friend. I know you found a bunch of money. Can I borrow $5,000? Can I borrow half of it? Can I just something like,
right.
I know it's hard asking friends for money, but I think I would rather ask my friend for money than murder them for money.
Well, I want to know what the long game was. Like, when did that start? Because that's interesting.
It's just, there's so much to this case that I feel like even with an answer and a solution, I feel like I don't have answers. Like, I feel like I needed to know more. And it's so sad that we don't have something for Michael to lay to rest, truly. That really sucks because he needed that closure, I feel like. And he's never gotten it, so.
Right.
Kylie, how do you feel about this case?
Well, I don't know if he will. That's the thing. Like, the ocean, I mean, there are sharks and things that do things
this
in the ocean.
This has been 6 years. I don't think it's...
Yeah. It's very... Yeah. Which is... even more sad. But for me, My best friend is a guy. So like,
actually, her best friend is a man named Eric, who is featured in the archives in an episode if you want to find it.
Yeah. So that's, it's just like, this is two cases that this has happened. And all of my friends are guys, like all of my best friends are guys. So it's like, I can't even imagine how she felt in that moment when she realized she was going to die by the one person that she has so much trust in, because I have a lot of trust in Eric. And I would just be like, this world is ridiculous. Like, I don't want to be here anymore because this is insane. Well, like, all of that would go through my head if something like this happened. Also, Eric, if you murder me, I'm going to haunt your ass so hard.
That's the same way I was thinking about it like that, too. And I was just thinking, like, I tried thinking that same scenario. Right. Yeah. And like, as much as I want to live, I also feel like I would be nervous to like fight my friend. And so I don't feel like right away my fight or flight would kick in correctly.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I wouldn't feel like it's really happening. Like, I would be so, because
like, this is a joke, right? Yeah, like, this is a prank.
And I was thinking about it. And also, I'm terrified. My best guy friend is probably either like Mason or Corey. And I'm sorry, but both those dudes are over 6 foot tall. As much as I like to pretend that Corey's 5 foot five and I lie to everyone and tell him he's 5'5", both these men are over 6 foot tall and both these men could easily bench press me. I'm pretty sure both Corey and Mason are very strong. Mason's hobby is going to the gym and Corey does fucking housework for fucking mm-hmm. fun.
Well, like, let's talk about Damon.
Oh my God. No, let's not. Damon could murder me with inside. I genuinely forgot Damon is my other guy back. I love you so much, Damon. And all three of these men are like buff, strong, tall men. But I was trying to think about it and I was like, if Damon or like Mason or I almost said Casey, Corey or Casey,
yeah,
my other guy best friend.
Yeah.
I have a lot of guy best friends too, I guess. But if any of my like really close guy friends came up to me and like started choking me from behind, it's game over. I don't think my fight or flight would kick in. But also, I can't stand my own against these people. And I know that for a fact. It would be entirely over.
That's what's like the most chilling about this is like my best friends are guys. And so like thinking about how she felt in that moment, in that very second where she realized this was happening, is chilling. And poor Buddy. I just can't even. I wonder if dogs have nightmares like that. That's crazy. Crazy, wow. crazy to think about.
That's so sad.
I know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you guys once again for coming and listening to this week's case with us.
All right. Thank you for joining us after dark. We can't wait to chat with you next week for another new episode. Sleep tight.
Hey, listener, did you have some feedback about this week's case? Or maybe you want to chat with us. Maybe you even have a suggestion you'd like to throw our way. We're always just a click away. You can easily find all of our socials on Linktree through Cryptic Soup Pod, which is available in our Instagram bio. You can also join the CSP Discord, where we would love to chat with you.
Thank you for joining us this week, and make sure to check out our sources available in the description if you want to dive deeper into this case. Don't forget to show your support and love for CSP by leaving a review and rating wherever you normally listen. Next week, we will be back with a new episode where you can join in on the conversation after dark.
Cryptic Soup Pod is a podcast that contains sensitive material at times. We understand if sometimes the subjects are too much for some of the listeners. We thank each and every one of you for being a member of the community and always supporting us. Thank you for everything, and we'll see you next time. So stay tuned. Hold your breath real quick. Okay, breathe.
I can't now.
Were you breathing with your nose a minute ago?
Mm-hmm.
You were whistling.
There's no T before mouth.
I'm not saying a T. Monmouth. Mon.
Mon.
Monmouth. Monmouth.
Monmouth.
That's what it spells. It's not my mouth.
My mouth.
Okay. Mon mouth. I'll mon mouth you. Okay.